Hello, everyone, and welcome to From Tip to Tail, a podcast dedicated to animal welfare. This podcast is sponsored by Cuddly. Cuddly is the only crowdfunding platform built specifically for animal welfare organizations worldwide. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Sydney. We've spent years working with animal rescues and have seen such amazing innovation, strength, and heart.
Having this personal connection with rescuers has made us more informed, grateful, and inspired. We hope by giving you an inside look, you will be too.
It is our 100th episode, everybody. And to celebrate this huge milestone, we're going to be bringing on our fearless CEO here at Cuddly, the one and only John Hussey. There is so much to know about the man behind the scenes, and today we're going to touch on his experiences, his knowledge, and the world of Cuddly. If you like this episode, be sure to click that subscribe button to listen in on similar stories. We are so excited, so let's get started.
Hey, John, how are you?
What's up, Bridget? Thanks for having me on your show.
We are so excited to have you on our 100th episode. Sydney, woo-hoo. Can you even believe that we are here?
I can believe it, but it doesn't feel real at this point. It seems like it went by so fast.
I can't believe that Sydney and Bridget, who are just two amazing human beings, have done this is your 100th podcast. It's unbelievable.
Thank you. It's bizarre to think too. It's like 100 animal rescues.
I was just thinking that in my head, trying to like visualize it. 100 people that we've sat down and talked to at this point.
Wild. But this isn't about us. This is about you.
No, I think at 100th, it should be about you two. And I know that this is your podcast, not my podcast, so I will defer. But I do think that it requires a huge shout out to what you two have accomplished. And when you think about the genesis of this and how it started, it was an idea that we baked together to try to share stories amongst the rescue community about how they're solving for the pandemic. Like, what are the best practices? What are they learning? And how can we be that bridge to help people survive and thrive during this, what were unforeseen times? Like, we didn't know where this was going. And you guys stepped in, zero podcast experience. Sydney giggled a lot in the early days, which is cute.
I still giggle. It still happens.
And you guys just own this lane. And to be at 100th episode, we talk a lot about in our business, but what we do, trust is our number one currency. And I really do believe in my heart of hearts that this podcast has really helped build that trust in the rescue community for Cuddly. Thanks to you two.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice to hear. And honestly, the fact that you put your faith in us, that you were like, just go and make it, is a very special trust exercise in itself.
It was.
Well, you know that I trust you too. I wish I could want to tell you that that's where that came from. I trust you implicitly. It just, let's throw stuff against the wall and see if it sticks. And you two came from a different angles. You had different viewpoints. And I don't know why I picked you two versus two others, but I picked the right two. I absolutely got lucky and trusted my intuition and it worked. And sometimes it works, right?
Every now and again. And yeah. When it doesn't work, you can just pretend like it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you didn't have to air it if you guys were really bad. You
know? Right. Yes, that's true. So now we're starting off emotional and I feel like...
I know.
It's happy emotions, so that's always good. But let's talk about John Hussey for a minute, because I know that our community has had this mysterious figure in the background. And they're like, who is this guy? And how did he start this? And wow, like, how did this all come into what it is today? So let's start with a young John Hussey. What was he like?
The young Sheldon story, right?
Yes.
The young John Hussey was really a handful, full of a lot of piss and vinegar. You know, I was always up to something, very entrepreneurial, even from my early days in high school. I would try to throw parties and promote parties and just always up to something. So, you know, very adventurous. I played a lot of sports. They were very important to me. Sports was important to me growing up. It was a strong outlet for me. I had an entrepreneurial dad who, he actually started a community bank when I was growing up. called Bank of San Pedro. And I watched him go through the process of raising capital and actually starting a bank from scratch in our town. And so that was a learning lesson that I took to. I thought it was amazing. And as a young kid, I got to play in the bank while I was under construction. So gave you this sense of seeing something built from the ground up. And so when I was 21, harboring those entrepreneurial visions, if you will, or desires, I started with one of my best friends, I started a messenger company in their garage, in my parents' garage. And I didn't know much about the business. At the time, I had a job that a lot of couriers were coming in and out. So I knew enough to see what they were doing. So we decided we were going to buy a scooter and we were going to deliver packages around town. So we bought the scooter, dumb and dumber, driving down the street in the scooter. And we get our first order and it's a delivery to Sherman Oaks from San Pedro. Well, there's no way we're going to take the scooter on the 405. So Andy Domingo, who was my partner and dear friend, he jumped in his car and delivered that. And we ended up growing that business to about 35 really good-looking, young, handsome men driving around. And I think all the ladies in the offices loved our company because they had all these good-looking drivers driving around delivering packages. And we ended up growing it to about a $3 million business. We ended up selling it. And so I learned a lot, but I've always been entrepreneurial my whole life.
Well, and then, of course, your claim to fame. Everyone knows you from Sunday nights. So how did you get into refereeing?
Good question. So when you're an athlete and you bump up against the top of your athletic skills, like you can only go so far because you're not as good as you thought you were, you go into a lot, go into coaching or officiating. There's like two lanes, you know, and coaching's the dark side and officiating, I went towards the light, so to speak. Although if you ask the coaches, we're the dark side. My uncle was a high school ref and he said, hey, why don't you come out and try this? And so, you know, you get to put on a uniform, you get to stay in sports. It's challenging. You learn things, you're growing, get a little money. So it was all kind of a combination of that. And I was in my early 20s. I've always been ambitious in anything that I do. And, you know, I didn't start out officiating high school football with this desire to say, I'm going to be in the National Football League. It was just something that I wanted to become proficient at. And fortunately, I guess 20 years later, after being in the NFL for that long, I think I have a level of proficiency. I've achieved that proficiency, I guess.
I think so too. Yeah, I feel like everyone I've spoken to, because I'm not a big sports person, but everyone else is in the whole world. But I know they all talk about the great calls that you make and like how you're like one of the good ones out there, one of the good white hat that people can respect your calls.
I appreciate that. You know, you tend in my business, it's funny, Bridget, you tend to focus on the mistakes. They call it the ceiling tile syndrome, where you walk into this beautiful room and everything looks beautiful and you notice that missing tile. I can tell you the mistakes that I made. They stick with you because you take such a pride and professionalism in not, for me, not being part of the story. I really work hard at that. And I really message my crew year over year over year that let's try not to be part of the story. People are not coming to watch us officiate a football game. And I know that the fans out there at times think that we show up on Sunday just to screw up their game. In general, that's not our plan, but things do happen from time to time.
If you want to see a game screwed up, I'll referee. That'll be the day, I think.
I don't know. I could give you some pointers. And I know you really well. It wouldn't be long before you're out there wearing the white hat.
So you've got this amazing entrepreneurial spirit. Obviously, you take a lot of pride in what you do. Growing up, though, how was your attitude around relationships with animals and furry creatures, let's say?
Yeah, so I grew up in a kind of an equestrian area in Southern California. And I also had my grandparents were in Oklahoma and Missouri. So I would go back to the farm or the ranch and visit them every summer. So there was an affinity around animals. It wasn't this close, passionate affinity, truthfully, but I was comfortable. We went out and I would feed the pigs in Missouri and go out in the and do that and the slop and stuff. So I wasn't afraid to be around them. My dad had horses in our backyard. I tried to ride them all the time. My dad bought really bad horses that were very well ill-mannered, and or it was me, I don't know, but I had several experiences where I broke my leg. I got hit by one and swung. It was dodging a bee or something, and it swung its head and knocked me out. And oh, no. I mean, so literally me and horses have had this love-hate relationship. I love horses, but they scare me a little bit. And then we've always had dogs my whole life. We've always had dogs. And so very comfortable around that. But I was raised by a dad who said the animals are supposed to sleep outside or sleep in a crate or whatever. And we've talked about this before, about my evolution around that is just since being involved with what we do with Cuddly and around this is Benji's at my feet right now. He's been following me around for last week because Paula's out of town. And it's just like amazing. Like he sleeps in my bed and I have a closeness to this guy that I've never had before.
I think too, everyone says like, I think animals have like a favorite in the home.
Oh yeah.
Emily could say that Benji loves her and Paula could say that. But when you walk into a room, Benji loses his mind. Mm-hmm. Like I've never seen a dog so happy to see someone. Like no offense, Sid, but your dogs do not get as happy as Benji. Like it's like he comes to life suddenly.
Mm-hmm. He goes airborne.
It's incredible. Like, and it's just the drastic difference too of like the quietest, most Emily called him like, he just doesn't do anything. He just sits there
does say that.
And doesn't do anything. And then suddenly it's like, he just had like a espresso shot. He's like off.
He's like an acrobat.
Is there something around? I don't know. You know, obviously Paul is here most of the time with him and they've, you know, they developed the closeness, but maybe it's just, he's knows that, I don't know. I don't want to say that I'm in charge because my wife would argue with that immediately. So I don't know. We'll leave it. Let's just leave that there. Maybe we should probably cut that out.
Yeah. Paula's going to be like, that's it. We're getting a second dog.
Yeah. We'll skip that. Who's in charge of that whole dynamic?
Oh man. Well, so I feel like it's so funny too, because I feel like your relationship with animals and animal rescuers has really evolved as the company has. Mm-hmm. So let's really get into the meat and potatoes. How did Cuddly get its start?
So a gentleman that I knew in Seal Beach, we had served on the Seal Beach Pony Baseball Board of Directors, approached me about investing in an idea of really basically monetizing pet adoption traffic. That was the initial business strategy. And then there was a crowdfunding piece of it too, as well, that he kind of raised as a secondary part of the business model, business plan. And I had known and been reading in 2013 that crowdfunding was starting to emerge. I believe that is the year around the time GoFundMe had started. And so this niche emerging industry of crowdfunding, and I was thinking as he's pitching me, wow, that's a great cross-section of pet, which was very hot sector, and crowdfunding together. I'm not really sure how they merged together and how they married together, but I knew there were two industries that were kind of, one was evolving and one was just really kind of just starting to show signs of life. And so I'm like, okay, let's do this. I'll give you some money and why don't you spin up an MVP site and prove to me that donors will trust us by giving their donations and that we can actually get shelters and rescues to want to raise money on our site. And we did. I hired somebody out of CrossFit, the CrossFit gym I was working out with. She was a former police officer. Bridget, you know Charlie. And I asked Charlie, who was an animal welfare, I mean, animal lover, right? And knew people in animal welfare a little bit. I asked her to go out and start knocking on doors and talking to rescues and seeing if they would open a campaign on Cuddly. And to her credit, she figured it out. Like figured out the messaging, figured out the conversation. We've come a long, long way since then, but not really having clear guidance and understanding of where this was going to go, give her a lot of credit for that. And it started to work. And what was interesting was over the first 2 years, the crowdfunding aspect of it continued to grow and the ad monetization of adoption traffic just was dead in the water. It was, we'd make money some months, we'd lose money most months. And it was an arbitrage game that just wasn't a business.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say too, the beginning ideas of Cuddly 2 was a really beautiful story. I mean, you guys know the story probably better than I do, but from what I know, it was, I believe what Mackenzie, the daughter had leukemia. Bridget, you can correct me, but I do remember it just hearing about how the idea even came into play. And I just remember it being such an inspiring way to go about leaving a legacy after that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she was at the Seal Beach Animal Shelter and asked her dad why there wasn't a Make-A-Wish Foundation for rescue animals, right? And that was the kind of the thread that they started to pull on by building this business idea. And her story's public. So she was a cancer survivor and she's thriving. Her dad and I ended up parting ways kind of in the journey, which happens. Business is stressful. You come at it from two different ways sometimes. But I was and have been absolutely certain to make sure that she still owns a very, very a piece of equity of the company, and she does to this day, in her honor, to make sure that she, for what she developed, the idea that she had for rescue animals, that she is rewarded someday if there is an event like that.
It feels like there's like, that is the secret sauce to like a really great company too, is like this passion and drive mm-hmm. and desire meeting business sense and good common like practices, because I think that's what we've all tried to get across to a lot of the rescues we worked with as well, is like passion is wonderful and it will take you so far. But in order to remain sustainable, like you do need to have good business practices to maintain what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the intersection of where we land, right? Is that we are a for-profit business built specifically to help our nonprofit business partners improve their fundraising. And, you know, it's always amazing to me when we give all this for free to the rescue community, all the support, paid advertising, fundraising consultants, email engine, social sharing, and they turn us down.
It's heartbreaking to me just because, I mean, a few years in, you see the beautiful part of Cuddly and what it does. You sit there and you see a fundraiser meet its full goal. You see an animal transform its body. You see all these things. And so you know it's truth when you're talking to rescues about it and saying how you can help. It's, I get everyone has their own, you know, way of doing things and whatnot, but seeing it in real life and seeing it happen in real time, it's the truth that I live by.
Sydney, you're so right. And it's so powerful what happens on Cuddly. And we'll talk about a story, right? And there's thousands of stories.
So many.
Thousands. I mean, you're talking thousands of animals that have been helped through the collaboration, because it takes our rescue partner. Our rescue partner, they're the heroes in this story. And they're the ones that are doing the very hard, non-glamorous work of going into these very difficult places, these very dark cases of abuse and neglect, and saving these animals to give them a life. And maybe their life is 5 years, maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's 2 years, but to take that on and to put that on yourself. And so that collaboration, really what we've, all of us, you know, that as a team collectively have built, is to take that pressure off them. There's so many complexities in what they do. And if we can solve that fundraising aspect for them, we can give them the tools for free to solve the fundraising to help that animal, then I feel like we're doing our part in this. It just befuddles me that people say, well, where's the scam? Or no, I'm not interested, or whatever. I don't like what you do, how you do this. But that's just the nature of the beast. And there's an old story that I learned years ago, that the church is full of people. And on one side of the church is the people that don't like you or know you. And on the other side of the church are people that love you and like you. And we as humans, by nature, we want to spend our time on the side of the church with the people that don't like us or don't know us, to try to move them over to the other side. And screw that. Like, look, I'm going to go spend time with people that like me and love me. And that's our partners that get it.
Oh, heck yeah, they do. I feel like it's been really amazing too, like over these past years, seeing how, yeah, it starts with one animal, but then suddenly it's like an entire operation is changed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to do so much more in their entire community and in the world because they started one place and grew from there. So
Well, it goes back to what we talk about all the time. Trust is our number one currency. And so just kind of giving those on the other side of the church a hall pass for a minute. Rescue's difficult. There's a lot of bad humans doing bad things to animals. And so by nature, I think rescuers in general maybe don't trust very easily. And so as we come from, we say trust is our number one currency, that's our job to try to get them in a trusting spot. So we all as a company, and you know that we as a company work very, very hard to protect the trusting relationship between our donors and our partners. But man, there's some people that can sling some mud out there.
Absolutely. I will say in the case of trust, though, I totally understand that trust is earned. It's nothing that we expect from people right up front. But I always like to think of our platform as risk-free. Nothing bad's going to happen to take a chance and put your faith in somebody who truly wants to help you. And that's everybody at Cuddly. That's a prerequisite when you get the job here is you have to love animals. You have to want to help people. You know, you hear this thing that people that don't do people do rescue because obviously people want to work with animals all their lives and they don't necessarily want to work with people because of the bad things they've seen. But inevitably, rescue is people. You work with people, you connect with people, and that's how you bring about change to animal welfare. It's always going to be a rotating circle, I think, when it comes to that. But I always tell people that it's really just worth putting your faith in people who do mean well, because it will work out for you in the end.
Yeah. And so as you see what's beautiful about it now, Sydney and Bridget, and what we've built collectively together is you see we have partners that do trust us and partners that will refer us and partners that will go to the mat for us if people start kind of getting carried away. And that's what's the beautiful part about it. And then you see the success stories, and we need to continue to highlight those more and more as we go along, because it's just beautiful. They're elegant when you see that. The one story that just jumps off of the page at me that I'll always remember, and it's on my business card, is Thor, this dog cared for by the Real Bark Rescue in Los Angeles. And Thor was beaten, dragging himself across the streets of Mexico, couldn't walk, and needed a lot. And to see pictures of Thor today, I don't say this much, but this dog is beautiful. I mean, beautiful, like majestic, beautiful, like handsome. Like you would say, that dog is handsome. And I don't know that I've ever said that in my life. But Thor needed a wheelchair, needed aquatic therapy, needed months and months of rehabilitation, which required a tremendous amount of financial resources. And the Cuddly community stepped in and we helped raise it. And actually, this was even before when we had products on our site. It was straight monetary. But we helped offset and we were able to buy that wheelchair and we were helped to pay for the aquatic therapy and stuff. And when you see that, when you see an animal that was living in those conditions and ends up living this life where now it runs around the park and has a forever home that's warm and loving and caring, if that doesn't turn you on, then I don't know what does.
Definitely. It's all about those underdogs, right? Everyone taking a chance and
I love them
and stepping out for them.
I don't know. I think Cuddly is the land of the underdog and the undercat, right? I mean, truthfully.
And under bunny and under horse. It's becoming more and more these days, especially, yeah, more exotic animals all over the place.
I love it.
Me too. It is so inspiring. And it is so amazing to see the work that we've done. It's so important, I think, and we tell this to our rescuers even, to look back on what you've done, because I think you can be so focused on like really like driving forward. And yes, that's always important, but really taking time to appreciate the lives that have been changed. And at this point, it's tens of thousands of animals. It's an incredible thing. So we have to narrow this down though, because we always like speaking directly to our rescuers. So I know you've had a lot of businesses in the past. You've been successful. You've really had a drive to be a champion in yourself. So I'm wondering, are there some business tips that you could offer a rescue? Especially, I mean, we pride ourselves in the tools that we offer rescuers. So what would you say are some things that you would recommend to rescuers really who are struggling to find their footing?
Yeah, I think the thing that jumps out at me is that even though you're a nonprofit, from a tax status standpoint, the really good rescues that we see run themselves like their businesses. Difficult at times because it's a lot of volunteers, but there's still processes and KPIs and things that you can use. And you see it quite a bit. You see a lot of people volunteer that are really successful in the business world, cross over and volunteer and become the CFO for a rescue, or, you know, take a lead position in that rescue. And so those are the ones that become successful, in my opinion, because they run like a business. We see a lot of people get into rescue because of the passion they have for animals, and then they kind of end up personally in debt or what have you, because they're not running it like a business. Cuddly is a for-profit business. We have a board. I report to a board. We have investors. So I have to run this like a business. And the way I look at this business, like the way I look at our mission, is that the better I can run it as a business, the more successful I can be in growing the business, high tides lift all boats. The more that I can do for our rescue partners, the more animals that can be saved, the better the experience for our donors, the safer it is for our donors to trust and know that their money's being used to help animals in a specific way. So everything that I do when I wake up in the morning is to run Cuddly like the best business that it can be run. We've made mistakes, we've learned, we grow, but we go back to the same thing. Trust is our number one currency. And so everything that we do, I try to run it like a business. And I think that's how you have to approach nonprofit too, as well. Because again, it's simply your tax status is that you're not for profit. That doesn't mean that you can't be run like a business.
Absolutely. That's such an important point. And so many of the organizations that we've seen really grow to a larger level, it's because of that, I think.
Absolutely.
So amazing. Now, okay, let's reflect on the wild ride that has been the past couple of years of the pandemic. How have things changed for Cuddly since March 2020?
Well, number one thing that jumps off the page is the phenomenal podcast team that we have. Hey. That was created in March 2020. We talked about earlier about the reasons why, but I mean, I'm so proud of the work that you two have done and the message that you're sharing and the trust and community that you're building. It's just incredible. So kudos to you two for taking on a challenge and thriving. You're thriving in this. So congratulations.
Honestly, it's been a little treat for us. Like you said, rescue has its really down days. So honestly, the conversations that we get to have with these rescues, and you get to hear their inspiring stories and how they got their foot. I mean, it's like a little break where you just get to talk to somebody and you get to connect with them. And I don't know, you get to be happy.
You know, Sid, I listen to the stories and I hear people tell, you know, and you ask the question, well, how did you get into rescue? And how did you, and those personal stories of hearing that, and there's an event or there's some animal that caught their attention that drew them in, and next thing you know, they're in the middle of building a rescue, right? I mean, just listening to that, I'm always a big fan of, I guess, autobiographies and learning about people. And so your podcast really fits in what we do. You get to tell their heroes. You get to tell our heroes' stories, allow them to tell their stories, I guess, give them a place to tell their stories. And it's beautiful. And I love hearing them. So again, but you asked the question about the pandemic. And what has changed, and having this outlet, having you do what you do, has been a tremendous success. Has the pandemic been good for us? From a business perspective, we probably did benefit from what they call a COVID bump. People were home. People were paying attention to animals, right? They were taking them out of the shelters. The ads that we were serving up were very effective because people were watching TV and they were scared. They wanted to know what was going on. And we happened to be advertising in places where they were watching. And so there was a real pickup, matured the business to a level that we can do a lot of great things for our partners today. Honestly, back then, I wasn't sure if we were going to be a thriving and successful business. We weathered the pandemic. We grew a lot as people and as a team. And now the company is thriving. I mean, it's like your podcast, the company is thriving. So there's definitely a mirrored effect there.
Definitely. I feel like this is a whole different company almost since when we started in 2022. I'm excited because I feel like I'm a part of a lot of the new initiatives that we're stepping into and that we get to do.
Yes.
And they're also amazing because I feel like there is that heart of rescue always at all of them. So I'm going to start you off and say, let's talk about our transport initiatives that we're really pushing right now.
So I'm a guy that loves trucks and warehouses and all that stuff in logistics, because it's been pretty much my whole business life has been, I was in the messenger courier business before, you know, and then I was in retail supply chain logistics for 20 years. So the conversation came up about the imbalance of supply and demand in the US with animals. And that's like right in my wheelhouse, right? So this convergence of animals and supply chain logistics. And I'm like, well, I think I can pretty much help in this area. Started having a conversation with some of the thought leaders in Haas and, you know, learned a little bit. What I learned too is that I really needed to put my toe, I wanted to go running in hellbent, like planes and trains and automobiles, right? And I realized, okay, hold on a second. You don't know what you're walking into completely here. Let's test a few things. And so that's where the Rescue Rover transport program came from, right? So let's get a couple of vans. So in order to actually pilot it, we rented a van for Austin Pets Alive and have been a lot, you know, paying for them use of that van and to allow them to save animals. They'll go into these shelters in the far reaches of Texas where these animals are going to be euthanized and they'll pull them out. Well, there's a huge need in Texas from what I'm understanding as I learn more. So we're going to donate a van fully. That'll be their van. They own it. We're the marketing partner. And then we're going to donate a second van to Second Chance Rescue of New York and test it out and see if we can make a difference. But I think there's a world that this gets bigger where we have to connect the platform from a technology standpoint to where these partners are talking to each other and they're sharing information about need and breed and scope of how many animals are in certain locations and where the imbalance can be and supply and demand imbalances can be cured. And there's a lot more to this conversation. And I certainly could dive in and go full-fledged at it, but that's not what I do every day. I can't do that and then be the CEO of Cuddly. So with my personality being as such, I've had to calm myself down a little bit and say, okay, two vans are appropriate. Let's put our toe in the water and then let's see where this goes from there. So all the partners that might be listening, we're not buying vans. So I just want to be clear there. We are testing a transport program and we'll see how it goes.
I mean, we've seen just from the podcast how important it is. And I think it is. People are used to that story of like, okay, the shelter is full, but they don't understand there are empty shelters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is really such an amazing program that we're getting involved in. And I'm so excited to see how many animals are saved because of it. It's going to be great.
I was on a call and Amy Gilbreth, who's the executive director at PetSmart Charities, who I have a lot of respect for, and I've learned a lot from her. She mentioned that she wishes she had a plane. And I have a desire to have Cuddly Air transporting pets around. And she has a big checkbook. So one day, hopeful that we can have a big plane flying around that they may help support to help solve this. We need to do this sooner rather than later, ideating how we can develop this. But I got it again, you know, I want to just test the two bands. But yes, transport is very important right now, because if there's a need for animals to go into forever homes and it's simply about transportation, that's a solvable aspect to this dilemma. Very solvable.
Absolutely. You just put out into the universe like another hope that you have. It's out there now. Now everyone's going to know about it. So is Amy. But are there any other things that you're really anticipating or hoping for that Cuddly can develop into in the future?
A lot of desire to see our community pet pantry program that we launched in January take hold and get established with some of the brick and mortar shelter partners across the US. Unfortunately, food insecurity is a thing today. And I learned that surrender prevention is kind of the topic of sheltering. And so can the pet pantry program scale and solve for some of the pain points that these brick and mortar shelters are having running their pet pantry programs. So I'm hopeful that we will solve for them. Like, so supply chain logistics for that is one, new donor acquisition and a paid marketing program, adding that, helping them gain more donors. Because donor fatigue is still real. And then also helping them identify who is a donor for a community pet pantry program versus maybe who's a donor for our current business. They might be two different archetypes, if you will. So look, you two know me very well, and this grass doesn't grow under my feet, right? We're always trying something at Cuddly, and that's just the way it needs to be. We need to be thought leaders. We need to be out in front. We need to put our money where our mouth is. I mean, like your Rescue Heroes series with Jennifer Jenkins, that was brilliant. It was a beautiful story. We need to do more of that. I don't know, Bridget and Sid, you know me, there'll be something tomorrow.
Definitely. I mean, I feel like, yeah, you've been a big pusher, and I think we probably would not have gotten to where we are and certainly done so many things. Like, I know you've pushed me to a level where I'm like, I don't think I can accomplish this, but I'm going to give it my best shot.
And she does.
It's remarkable when you have someone really like lighting a fire under you, what you can accomplish, right, Sid?
No, absolutely. I love it. I think you take the approach of there's unlimited potential in every single person, and I'm going to push you to your limit and you're going to get there. And I think every time, Bridge, you've gotten there every time. You do not cease to amaze us.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And your growth as a female executive leader of this company should be, well, it is championed by me, right? So I'm very proud of it. Sydney, I can't say that about Bridget and not mention your accomplishments as well. I mean, you're at the top of the leaderboard month over month over month, and the most money and donations raised for your partners. You set a goal to read 100 books or 50 books, 100 books, and you were reading 50. You do photography. I mean, you do a podcast. I don't know how you do it all as well. So both of you are phenomenal people that have accomplished a lot and should be very proud. And you're so young still in your journey. And that's what makes your future so bright. And I'm just lucky to have you on our team. I mean, collectively, like, this podcast is a perfect example of how you guys just have shined. I'm absolutely shined.
Aw, stop it.
We're going to bring you on every week now.
Right? I'll just repeat this episode.
I know, right? Whenever you need a little inspiration.
Yeah.
True, though. I speak genuinely from my heart. You guys know that. And you guys are you're both very amazing. And you should be very proud of yourself. And that, I think, you know, when I look at the executive team at Cuddly, I hope I don't offend anybody by this, but it's a female-led company. And I'm damn proud of that. You know, they always say, if you want something done right, have a female do it. I want to hire the best people. That's what I feel like I've done. But this company is definitely female powered and it's well run.
Heck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Lady power.
Right.
I mean, and John.
And John.
Yeah, I would have never got hired here if I didn't start the company.
Well, so we have to ask then, you've done a lot of things. You've been around a lot of influential people, and certainly you've become a leader in a lot of different forums. So I'm wondering, is there some piece of advice that someone's given you that has been really remarkable and has kind of stayed with you?
Yes. I think that for me personally, in my journey in officiating and with Cuddly, in my marriage, in pretty much things that you touch in your life, the number one word that jumps off the page is grit. There's a book out. It's written by a lady that talks about grit, tenacity. When I put my hand out and said I wanted to be a referee in the National Football League, there were six gentlemen collectively total that got the opportunity to go to NFL Europe. I was one of them. They all five got hired as referees. There was a spot open, and the guy that was my supervisor at the time decided to go hire a gentleman out of college, straight out of college. No referee experience, a National Football League officiating experience whatsoever. It was hard for me and difficult for me not to take that as a personal slight. I mean, it probably was, you know, I don't know, maybe there was this experiment that they wanted to try and whatever, but it knocked me down quite a bit because it was a dream for me to do this. But I got back up and I took on these certain challenges, and I told myself I was going to prove to them that I'm that guy. And when the next spot opened, there I was in the lobby, And I think they probably, you know, figuratively speaking, looked out in the lobby and was, is that Hussey guy still out there? And I got the job. And I consider myself to have achieved a level of success as a referee. Some would say differently, but I'm proud of that. And Cuddly was the same. There was a time in 2018 where I think we tried to do too much. And not for nothing, we were just trying to become too much to too many constituencies. And it put a real dent in our balance sheet. And so I had to stop everything. You know, we had to sell our home in order for me to really get behind this idea and lean into it, because I think it was one of those things where I was trying to do too much personally. And if I really, really believed in this business, like I said, I did, I felt like I needed to go all in. And credit to my wife, Paula, we sold our home. You know, we moved in a 2-bedroom apartment, which was interesting, but we did. And that tenacity and that grit has paid off, right? So the business is strong today, it's thriving. We have 40 some people working for us. We have thousands and thousands of rescue partners. We're raising tons and tons of dollars for them to help them do what they do. And you know, our future is very, very bright. And so all of that summarizes into grit and tenacity. Never give up if you really want to achieve it. I tell my kids that, and that's how I live my life.
Oh, get out of here. I love that. It actually reminds me, I say Emily told me something like that the other day too. So she probably got that from you. She said, if you want, you can have anything. You just have to want it bad enough.
Yeah. She's a mini me for sure.
She is.
God, watch out for that.
Oh my gosh. Well, this has been really wonderful. We got to snag you for an hour of your work day, which has been really amazing. And I hope it's been the boost that it has been for us.
Been an honor for me to be here with you two. Really has. And it's actually the hour flew by. You guys make it very comfortable and comforting. And it just underscores again how proud I am of both of you. Thank you.
Thank you. We see John every day, but we rarely get the chance to reflect on the experiences we've gone through together as a company. So it was so wonderful to be able to sit down, take a pause, and chat with our CEO, John Hussey. If you want to learn a little bit more about him, maybe check out his referee photos. You can check our show notes or our blog.
And as always, remember to rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast. And be sure to follow Cuddly on all social media accounts at We Love Cuddly. That's C-U-D-D-L-Y. Thanks, guys.